Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Welcome. I am so excited today. I know I'm always excited, but I'm super excited because, of course, I just spent 40 minutes talking to Brent off air before I finally hit the record button. But my good friend, Brent Adamson, is here with me today. We're going to talk about value, but I want to tell you a little bit about Brent. And if you know that he was with CEB, of course, a while back and moved to Gartner, where he was a distinguished analyst. And he's laughing because I said to him earlier, hey, is that like president? Like once you're president, you're always president. So I always get to call you a distinguished analyst. But anyway, today he is with a company called Ecosystems, and I'm going to let him tell you what Ecosystems does, but he's the global head of research and communities there. So he's still out there, you know, talking about good things with everybody and bringing the sales community together, but also helping Ecosystems grow. So welcome to the show, Brent.
Thanks, Alice. It's good to be here. But the distinguished, you know, so I keep this floating above my head right here, which is the state of Nebraska where I'm born and raised. I'm corn fed. So there's nothing distinguished about any of us from Nebraska. Warren Buffett would tell you the same thing. So the not that I know because I've never met him, but the but anyway, it's good to be with you. And there's a ton to talk about.
A ton to talk about, as always. But just start off by telling us a little bit about what Ecosystems does, and then we're just going to jump into our, you know, talking about value because you and I have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ecosystems, the website is ecosystems.us, it's a SaaS company because everything's a SaaS company today.
Right.
And we have built and offer a platform for companies to use with their customers collaboratively to sit down virtually or figuratively or literally to sit down and figure out, all right, what are you trying to accomplish and what are we trying to accomplish together? And then what are the dimensions of value along which we can measure those objectives and track them over time? There's a lot of robustness to the platform and how you build all out. But that at the basic level, it's how can we ensure that we are collaboratively defining the dimensions of value for this relationship and then making sure that we make good on that promise together over time, which is a very powerful way to build a relationship from start to finish. And ultimately, hopefully there's not from start to finish, from start to expansion, maybe is a better way to put it.
Start to expansion is much better, I think, really, because that's what it is, because it's new customers when you're first starting a relationship, being really transparent, working together, guiding all the things, of course, that the Gartner research and other research tells us, and then maintaining those relationships in a very open forum and expanding them. I think it's absolutely there. And of course, we know that the value has to carry over this entire journey that customers 100%. Take.
Yeah.
So let's jump right into value. And you know that we have CEOs and those who support CEOs listening to us. And it's important today to talk to CEOs about sales in a different way than we had in the past. And, you know, I've been on this train for a while and, you know, moving forward because CEOs need to understand sales now today differently than ever in the past. They need to understand their role in sales maybe a bit differently than they had in the past. A lot of times it was like, oh, now I have a CRO, I'm done with sales, or now I have a VP of sales, I don't have to do that anymore. But not true. And because the buyer journey has changed so much and there's so many buyers, every team in the company, every, you know, what used to be silo, you know, marketing, sales, customer success, operations, finance, all now have to be orchestrated in a different way to be customer focused. So in terms of value, let's talk about that and what CEOs need to understand about value that they may not.
Well, I think particularly at the CEO level, and especially the founder CEOs, which I know is not everyone that you work with, but either way, whether you're a founder or not, I think there's a strong predilection. There's a strong tendency among CEOs. In fact, there's a strong tendency among all of us as senior executives when we think about value to think about what is the value of our solution? What is the value of our product? What is the value of working with us? What is the total value, the lifetime value that we can provide to your company? And so the point of all that being, it's just natural, right? But but ultimately, I think misguided might be a little unfair, but it's ineffective and limited. But there's this natural tendency for us when thinking about value to think about it introspectively. So we start with us rather than starting with the customer, right? So and I know that this almost sounds like a platitude, but it's just such a common thing to do that we don't even realize we're doing it. So no, I'm interacting
not at
with
all.
The customer.
I mean, we think about, what's the lifetime value of this customer? What value, value of what we're selling to them? What is the value to them versus,
So let's flip it. So I'm going to put one other concept on the table, which I know will resonate with you. We've talked about in the past, and then we can kind of show how those two work together. Because when I'm talking to CEOs these days, and even when I was still at Gartner, over the last couple of years, the thing that became very, very clear in all of our research in sales and marketing and success at Gartner, and it continues today, is that the number one thing we can and need to solve for in B2B commerce today is essentially customers' confidence in their own ability to make complex decisions on behalf of their company. So I tell CEOs all the time, so we need to run everything through the confidence lens. Now we can, so with that, because decision-making turns out to be really complex. So there's three forces eroding decision confidence. One is decision complexity. It's just really hard for customers inside their own organizations to reach decisions and therefore purchase decisions. Mm-hmm. So decision complexity. One is information overload. There's just so much high quality information out there that just customers are overwhelmed with. You know, you're telling me to zig, they're telling me to zag, you've got data, they've got data, or you're all saying really smart stuff and you've all got a white paper and I've read them all and I'm just confused at a higher level. So this, but it's okay, because as a CEO, we're a thought leader in our industry. Yeah, so are three other companies. We're all thought leaders. I call it the smartness arms race. And so the only one to lose there is your customer is just confused, right? They don't know what to do. So there's decision complexity, information overload. And the third one is this idea of what I call value opacity. And I'd put a better word against it because it sounds pretty fancy, but I'm not smart enough to think of a simpler word for opacity. But it's just like we're unclear on value. And so if you think about it, when we think about confidence, generally we're solving for our customers or our prospective customers confident in us. Yeah. Are they confident in our capabilities? Are they confident in our product? Are they confident in our people to execute? Confident in, our brand and our sales? And what we find and what I find over and over again is that the crisis of confidence we're facing today is not that customers aren't confident in you. They're not confident in themselves and their ability to make these decisions on behalf of their company. And when you bring it back to value, this is where actually it starts to get really interesting. So again, we talk about the value of our product, the value of our solution, the value of working with us. But if you're going to go on a true value journey with a customer, the first thing you got to help your customers do is just figure out, are they confident that they're even thinking about the right thing in the first place, right? Are they, but before we talk about like, hey, look how much money my solution can save you by installing this. Do they even see the value of trying to of addressing the problem that your solution addresses, right? So you have to go way, the value discussion has to start significantly farther upstream than your capability.
Right. Well, and Brent, I think that most sellers today, most selling teams are not thinking about confidence at all.
Yeah.
And they have to start thinking about the sale in a different way, because we're still selling very transactional. At least that's what I'm seeing, even though we think we're doing a collaborative sale and we're being, more consultative and we're working with these big teams and all of that, we're still taking steps to move them towards purchasing versus discussing the bigger picture and how this project fits into the bigger picture, discussing, the impacts that will happen internally, discussing how each individual person is going to be impacted and how their team's going to be impacted. There's so many things that we're missing because we're not digging deep enough, because we're still, even though it's not transactional, but it is very transactionally led selling still. And I think that sellers aren't even trained to think about things like this. But one of the things that I'm hearing people say a lot is, when all else is seemingly equal to your customers, they can't differentiate you from the others.
Yeah.
How you sell matters. But I don't 100%. Think anybody knows what that means. How you sell matters? What does that mean? But this notion of confidence is what part of the how you sell, because yeah. I bring value to you, Brent, when you are confused about the way to buy and what to buy, and you have no confidence in your own team's decision-making and other things around that. When I can bring some of that to you, I'm bringing value to you when I have confidence in mind 100%. And helping you gain confidence.
Let me put a name against it and get your reaction. Yes. Actually, for all the times we talked, I don't know that you've heard this particular riff. This is something I've been thinking about the last couple of months. Is so for those who read it, the Challenger Sale, the Challenger Customer is largely, you know, that body of work that we built starting, believe it or not, 12 years ago, was largely based on this idea of frame breaking. So you map a customer's mental model of how they think their business works, and you find places to displace or disrupt that model, to break that frame and show them a better, different way to think about their business. I still stand by that, by the way. I think it's still right, but I think there's diminishing returns on it in so far as everyone, I don't know, that's overstated, but other companies are engaged in similar types of approaches, particularly around thought leadership, even if you've never read the Challenger work.
Right.
So here's where I'm landing. So you take that, so that sort of diminishing window of opportunity to differentiate on your ability to be frame breaking. Mm-hmm. And then you take this confidence, this crisis of confidence. And so if I put a bumper sticker around, that's what I've done for years. I'm the bumper sticker guys. Like, how do I take little, you know, like little snippets of phrases in memorable ways and put around big ideas? And here's the bumper sticker on this is, I think there's an opportunity for us today as sellers and sales organizations and commercial engines to move from a frame breaking posture to move closer to what I would call a frame making posture. So from
yes.
frame breaking to frame making. Right. And what I mean by that is, Where customers really struggle around decision, around decisions, around information, around value, is I just need a framework. I need yeah. some sort of way to organize. You know, when I think about, let's say I'm buying your solution, and it's a complex solution, maybe it's multi-$1 million, and it's like, oh, bleep, how do I even do that in my
right.
company? Who do I need to get involved? And they're going to say no. What's legal to get? No, now I've got the regulatory and the CISO, and your head kind of explodes. It's like, could someone, it's almost like a travel agent. Remember, travel what? Agents went out of business because I could do it all online. And all of a sudden I tried to do it online and found out it was overwhelmed. And I realized, you know what I need? I need a travel agent, right? So
yes.
the profession disappeared and then came back. It's just, mm-hmm. and so around decision complexity, I think that's so one way you can play the role of frame making is put a framework around buying, right? Mm-hmm. So to help your customers think about, coach them through. I know it sounds crazy, but actually coach them through their own internal purchase process. You might think it's their yeah. company. They should know how to buy. And I guarantee you, they don't. Right. And when things go off the rails, they always call you with a conversation. It starts with the phrase, it turns out that. And in sales, whenever a conversation starts with the phrase, it turns out that, bad things happen. It's like dating when someone says, we need to talk. Nothing good happens after that. Right. So it turns out that legal wanted to take a look at the contract and they've got some questions. It turns out that there's some regulatory concerns about how this is going to be rolled out in Europe that we didn't anticipate. And more, I think 9 times, if not 10 times out of 10, Alice, when your customer says the phrase, it turns out that, it's not just that bad things happen, it's that they're legitimately surprised. They
Absolutely.
Didn't see this coming. And they're overwhelmed and frustrated because even if they didn't want to buy your solution per se, they wanted to make progress against solving a problem. And now they're bleeping stuck and they're really
exactly.
frustrated. So what if you were the company that helped them anticipate that obstacle, helped them avoid it to begin with? What if you took them by the hand and guided them through a decision-making process, gave them a heads up? By the way, we found the phrase I use all the time, I have for 20 years in working with other customers like you.
Yes.
One of the things we found is because now I'm not the teller or the expert. I'm just a broker.
You and I are so
right?
copacetic on this because yeah. that's what I always say. Well, in working with others like you, we
right.
found, right?
Exactly.
And it's true
right.
because that's
just,
what I bring
yeah.
to the table.
It's literally the value you provide.
I work with people like you.
This is what you and I do for a living and have done for decades, but that's what a yeah. seller can do too. The value
right.
that you as a seller bring to the table is your ability to be a broker of information, a broker of advice. In
yes.
working with other customers like you, we have found that legal usually is going to want to get involved. And by the way, they always get involved late and they blow everything up. It's going to drive you nuts. I would suggest we pull them in early. And when you do, they're going to have these three questions. Here's how to answer them. So that's putting a framework around buying. At Gartner, we call this buyer enablement. And the more
yeah.
I think about it, the more I think it fits into this broader picture of frame making. We can do
yes.
the same thing for information. So this is the article I wrote for with colleagues. Just, that sounded self-serving. Sorry, but while at Gartner, we put an article in HBR called Sense Making for Sales. And it's a really powerful idea around same principle applied to information, which is boy, there's a lot of information out there from us, from competitors, from third parties, from analyst organizations. Let me see if I can just help you make sense out of it. Let me give you a framework to prioritize it, to analyze it. Three questions you should ask as you consume this information to figure out what's right for you. So my job is not to tell you what to do. It's just to chalk the field so you can come to your own conclusions. Because if I'm solving for your confidence, you have to decide, right? And then finally, so that's a framework around information. And I know I'm going on a bit, but bear with me because there's one more, is this framework around value, which is, and that's where I live now. That's what ecosystems does. Like, let's see if we can, in our case, through software, put a framework around, okay, what are you trying to do? Why is that valuable? By the way, do your three colleagues agree with you that that's what they're trying to do? Let's get alignment around the 2 to 3 outcomes you're trying to achieve. Now let's get alignment around what are the KPIs that we're going to track to determine whether or not we're making progress against those outcomes. So what are you trying to do? So what are you trying to do and how will you know when you get there? So let's put in the metrics. Let's set some targets. Now let's build a timeline. This happens inside the ecosystems platform so that we can track it over time. So what I'm doing there is putting a framework around value. I got one last thought because this epiphany I literally had falling asleep last night. I think there's one more dimension and it's implementation. So I think helping your customers put a framework around implementation. How long is this going to take? Who should be involved? Where is this going to go wrong? So those are 4 different examples. Framework around a framework for decision-making, a framework for information, a framework for value, and a framework for implementation. That to me, and now from a CEO's perspective, if you think, well, gosh, my reps need to do that. I would say, gosh, your website needs to do that. Gosh, your success teams need to do that. Heck yes, your salespeople need to. Like, this is team sport. How can we collectively as a company, from top of funnel to expansion opportunity, whoever those titles are, whatever functions we call them, how can we play the role of frame maker to our customers to solve for their confidence and their ability to make bigger decisions on behalf of their company? That's my spiel. What do you think?
I like it. It's right on. And I think it really encapsulates my thinking in a different way because these are things that I've always done, but I love how clearly you stated it. And I think that's going to be helpful to everyone. And I know that in organizations that are trying to move forward as sellers and be more modern sellers or whatever you want to call them and really understand how people buy, we need the CEO to orchestrate across again, you know, if we're going to build these frameworks, it's not the lone seller going out. It's not even your seller and their SE and one customer success person. It's everybody in your organization understanding how to build frameworks for your customers from, like you said, top of funnel to, you know, expansion so that they can play the role they play best. Sellers play a specific role and it's an important role, but our buyers need lots of other people involved to help them. For example, you said implementation. And I think when we have a more transactional view of the sale, we sort of forget about implementation. It's like, I'm just trying to get to the point where we close, right? And then it's sort of your problem.
Then it's not my problem, right? It's either your problem or it's my other team's problem. I hand that off. Yeah. I give it to someone else and I go to Cancun on the president's trip and I'm good, right? And then the thing crashes and burns 6 months to a year later because we didn't have our derriere covered on this, right?
And we understand now more, and that's why we've built customer success. We understand that we do need to onboard and we do need to get user adoption and we do need, you know, to like come renewal time. Oh, they haven't used it for 6 months. Whose fault is that? Not theirs. Exactly. It's yours that you didn't.
Well, and in fact, not only have we come to understand it, I think more importantly, our customers have come to understand it because they have wiped out on this 3 or 4 times. And it's like one of these fool me once, shame on me. No, the other way around. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And that's I'm not doing this again. But what that does is it creates all this reluctance. Like, oh, we tried this thing last year with the CRM system or whatever, and it was a disaster. So, and so in many ways, all of us today collectively are paying for the sins of our forefathers on the crappy 100%. Implementation because our customers have been there, got burned, not doing it again. And now they're incredibly reluctant. They lack confidence in themselves. And so this becomes an interesting conversation around, how can I provide implementation guidance as part of the sales process, for example?
Up front, the beginning, don't wait 100%. So long because, again, it's a framework, right? So what you're saying is, hey, let's consider all these things before you buy. And, you know, myself, I've been in this trap where I really wanted to buy this thing. I set aside the budget. I go and buy it for my company. And then we don't have time to implement it properly.
Yeah.
And so it was a waste of money, even though I really, really, really wanted to
do it. So imagine if that sales rep or even on their website, which, again, I'm agnostic to channel. You could have self-read this. You could have learned this on your own through information on a website. You could have learned this through customer testimonials and videos. You could have learned this from a sales rep. But imagine if someone had said to you or shared with you, maybe that's a better way to put it. Hey, Alice, I got to tell you, we sell this thing a lot. And here's what's going to happen next. And you're going to hate us. You're going to hate yourself and you're not going to get the value out of it. So here's the three signs to watch for to know that this is so, you know, whatever comes next, but there's just like a heads up. Like this is, that would have been so helpful. And then by the way, solution to it. So here's how you avoid falling into that trap, Alice. So when you buy this thing, you're all going to get really, really busy. And I totally get it. So here's how we're going to help you, or at least here's the guidance I would give you something. So when it happens, you know how to identify and say, oh, that's what Brent was talking about. Yeah, we got to watch for this. He gave me the advice. I know what to do now, because here's what happens. Otherwise, you sit there and I don't know if this happened to you, but it's like you just get frustrated and you kind of hate yourself. And then when you hate yourself, you hate the rep because the rep is involved in making you hate yourself. Right. And then you just sit there and think, this is why we can't have nice things. You know what I mean? And it's just
exactly.
And notice everything we're talking about here isn't about selling and buying. It's about humanity. You know, it's like
humans. That's right. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, I think with the implementation piece, sometimes sellers should slow down and say, you know what? You wanted to get this up and running by this date, but you're telling me you also have a new ERP system coming in and you also have this going on and you're hiring 30 salespeople. And
100%.
So, like, it's my job as a seller, the seller as orchestrator, right? Because I have a whole team to say, it doesn't sound like you will actually be able to implement this in the fullest way that you want to based on all these other things you've told us. Maybe the timeline should look more like this, but I wouldn't even know that as a seller.
Exactly right.
Right?
Exactly.
If I hadn't dug in differently. Yeah.
That's right. So this is why, and again, I got to be totally honest with you. It's almost embarrassing. This capability actually exists in the ecosystem platform. What I'm embarrassed with is I didn't fully appreciate or understand or know that until I got here. Because imagine how I tie that to value, right? So we put our two frameworks together around value and implementation, which is to say, based on working with other customers like you, we found I know you want to implement this in 6 months and you want to do it across four silos. It's like, that's probably not. Here is a timeline.
Probably not going to happen.
So let's build out the project plan. All this can be done in our software. It's super cool. But there's other, obviously, you can spreadsheet it. You can do it on a whiteboard. Do it on a napkin. I don't care, but do it, right? Which is, here's how this is probably going to unfold. And then here's the incremental steps in value that you should be watching for along the way, right? So that I can break out into, I can atomize value and I can atomize implementation and make it feel doable and also make it feel like I'm making progress as I go. And then from the supplier perspective, it allows me to track where we are, right? So now I can give you a call and say, Alice, remember we built out that project plan. We're 2 months in. This is where we should be. This is the value you should be receiving. Yeah. I noticed our dashboard's lit up yellow over here. Let's have a talk because I want to make sure we get you back on track because I really want this to work for you. So, and by the way, you don't have to talk to me. You can see your own dashboard. It's like, it's blinking yellow. It's like, oh, right. Brent and I talked about this. So here he is. We're right where he said we're going to be. I'm blinking yellow. Okay. I got to get after this. Right. But it's just like, I'm going to get really deep here for a second and no one cares about this stuff, but we all do at the same time, which is like, we just all feel so darn alone. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's like, I'm just alone in trying to figure this out. I'm alone in trying. And it's like my neck's on the line for the implementation. I don't really know what I'm doing. We're alone as a company or I'm alone as a stakeholder. And I think
I'm alone. I don't know what to do. My plate is really full. Right.
My credibility shot. I'm embarrassed. I'm going to bed at night thinking I'm going to get fired. I mean, like these are, I don't want to over dramatize, but this is
reality
for so, right. This is humanity. This is where, you know, it's like, I was talking to Matt Dixon, my co-author and good friend the other day. And he's got a new book coming out, by the way. It's really funny when Matt writes a new book, everyone assumes I wrote a new book. I'm not part of that book. It's called The Jolt Effect, but it's all about these very themes we're talking about.
Wow. Yeah.
It'll be worth checking out. But we were talking about the economy and how the economy makes all this worse. But I said, and he and I agree on this, but it's like the way I kind of phrased it in my head is, you know, it's not that customers struggle to decide. It's not that today's customers struggle to decide because of the economy. I think today's customers struggle to decide because of their humanity.
Yeah.
Right. That's the thing. And so what the opportunity, here's the opportunity for us as CEOs and everyone below CEO is we tend to ask the question, how do we get them to buy? And when you think about the value of our solution and the you know, and all the things that we and our differentiators, we're really
well, the old, hey, what's the CEO saying to these guys? What's it going to take to get them to close this deal?
Exactly,
you know,
exactly right. 100%. And it can get even crasser than that, like steak knives. And these are the good leads and all the Glengarry, Glenn Ross stuff. Right. But fundamentally, whether it sounds that crass or not, it's quite, what we're solving for is how do we get them to buy? And I would encourage everyone to replace that question with, rather than how do we get them to buy, it's how do we help them decide?
Right.
That's 100%. That's a posture, right? Because that's our biggest competitor today. It's not status quo. It's not the competition. It's customers' inability to confidently make decisions. So how do we help them decide? And even if you help them decide to go with someone else, you're just making more decisions happen. I think the thing we need to solve for today is just how do we get more people making more decisions just to grow the freaking
pie of commerce.
Exactly.
So it's not no decision, status quo.
Exactly.
And the problem is, though, of course, you know, you and I have talked about this before. We don't teach salespeople to decision-making skills, consensus-building skills, things they need today. They need to learn how to orchestrate. They need to learn how to bring people to consensus. And they need to learn how to lead a decision.
Well, think about it. So all the things, so this goes not to beat the drum, but these are very human dynamics we're talking about, right? Right. And think about how we train sales reps. We don't train sales reps on psychology or human biases or humanity. We train them on process and activities, right? It's like, this is the, here's on methodology and like, here's the flow and do this step, then follow with this step and then do it this number of times per week to ensure that you get this amount into the funnel that converts at this rate. And we lose. And what's funny enough is in doing all that kind of training, we're probably diminishing the very humanity that most of those sales rep professionals come to the table with. We're actually turning the dial down on a set of tools that they already naturally have. Rather than amplifying that humanity, we're masking it. I'm just making this up as I go, but that sounds right to me. Do you buy that?
I do buy it. And I feel like, you know, sales process is great. I love sales process on the one hand.
You've got to have visibility. You've got to have a pipeline. You've got to have visibility in the pipeline. You got to be able to like report a number to the street or your shareholders, right?
Yeah. Not teaching salespeople. We're not equipping them with the right tools. So if you're a CEO listening to this right now, a CRO or anybody who's impacting sellers and all those who enable those to sell, think about what training you're giving them and what you're asking them to do. You're asking them 100%. To follow a process. What I love about process is it allows us to each be a human inside of it. We can follow it and be a human and help people make decisions and help build these frameworks and build consensus and do all of those things. And I think that as a CEO, you need to look out over your sales team, which is not, you know, not just sellers really when we say that, it's your whole go-to-market team, because again, from top of funnel, that might be your website. It might be your social media. It could be anything, any way that people are finding you. And you have to start thinking, how are we helping these people from the first moment they see us to start making a decision to solve their problem? Yeah. And, you know, back in the old days, before we had any of these tools or even the internet, when I was selling, dark ages, had to, you know, work by candlelight. But I always would do two things with my customers. One is I would do what we call a mutual action plan now. I don't even know if I called it anything. I'm like, hey, let's just map out what this looks like. You want this by this date and you want it to work like this. So let's write down all the steps that are going to have to happen. What you guys are going to have to do, what we're going to do, and when it should be done by in order for you to have implementation on this date, right? So I just map that all out with them on a simple spreadsheet or a, you know, a piece of paper, because I didn't have a Word document back then.
And or the ecosystems platform, shameless plug,
right?
Sorry, that was a straight up shameless plug. But by the way, I apologize for that. And before you even do that, it's like, there's a step before that, which I know you're on board with, which is, do we even all agree that this is a problem we're solving? If this is the right way to, like, before we map out the journey, can we all agree that this journey is even the right journey to begin with? Right. But it's all part of what you're saying, right?
Well, on that note, I'll just remind you of something I've probably told you before. Bob Miller my dad's partner, Miller Hyman, in case anybody didn't know.
What a great guy. I never had the pleasure of meeting your dad, but I did meet Bob, and Bob was a character. He was awesome.
Such a character. Yeah. And he used to say, Mr. Customer, I have a solution to a problem that neither you nor I completely understand. Right?
I love it.
But that's what we do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we
tell you,
say,
so hey, I'm
here's
so
the solution. Like
I'm working with I don't know if you know Carla Johnson. Does that name ring a bell to you? Maybe
yes.
not. So Carla's written a book called Rethink Innovation, and she's an innovation expert. She comes out of the marketing practice, but this is like stealth mode type stuff. But she and I have been working on some really interesting ideas around how do we apply ideas of innovation to sales specifically. And I think that's where the really interesting things lie, is around this idea of like, I as a seller come to you as a customer and say, I've got some information. I've got chocolate. You've got peanut butter. I've got information perspectives, you know, working with other customers. You've got problems. You've got an understanding. You've got desire, the things you're trying to do. And when we put those two things together, it's not like it's an obvious like, oh, this piece of my solution fits that piece. But rather right. it's like, why don't we put this stuff together and see what we can come up with that might actually solve a problem in a way that neither of us can fully understand right now. That's where you're adding real value, I think.
That is, gosh, absolutely. But I think that, you know, talking about the problem and thoroughly understanding it with all of the people who have it is step one.
Yeah.
Then when you say, yes, there are some solutions out there. Ours is one of them.
Yeah.
Let's map what it would take to work towards that solution. Because you're probably going to have to take these same steps whether you buy it from me or buy it from your competitor.
Exactly.
But because I've been taught how to guide you through decision-making, I'm adding value in a way that maybe the competitor isn't. And then I used to always do this pros and cons sheet. And, you know, what we used to have, you know, big chart pads before they had the sticky ones for the wall, but we still had big chart pads and we'd write on them. Yep. And I would draw like a T chart with like, okay, do what you're doing now, buy from us, buy from the competitor, or build a new in-house solution, or whatever they had told me they were thinking about doing.
Yeah.
And then I'd say, those are great. Let's walk through each one of them. What are the pros and cons of each? Totally neutral. Now, I know we don't teach sellers how to do this, and it would be really hard for them to do it probably because it's hard
but
for them
do.
To remain neutral. But some do. Yeah. And if you can do that in conjunction with, okay, so thoroughly understand the problem, look at all the potential solutions and see what the pros and cons are and map out all the steps and the, or as you call them, the frameworks, like, okay, we're going to have to build this framework and then we're going to have to build this framework and don't forget this framework and don't forget implementation. Because if we bring implementation back to the front, we may decide that the close date is completely different
100%
based on when you're going to be able to implement. And you know, everybody's screaming about close dates, right? They can't forecast because they don't have good close dates. And my famous saying, you know, as I have a few of those as well as you do, is, close dates come from customers, not quotas.
Yeah, you're right.
So
you know,
and you got to work with the customer on the close date. You can't just come up with that on your own. And if you don't
100%.
Do this kind of mapping, how are you going to come up with the real close date?
Can I tweak your phrase? Because I just love
Yeah, go.
What if we say close dates come from confidence? Right.
Oh gosh, let's both tweak that today.
Because
both treat that today.
Because or let's put them together even better. So close dates come from customer confidence, right? That's right. Because so I'm just it is not just because your customer's lacking confidence. It will still it won't even come from them either, right? It comes from confident customers. Close dates come from confident customers. There's our bumper sticker.
That's it. That's our bumper. Okay, tweet that. I'm going to tweet that, and we're going to tag each other. All right, I got to let you get to your next meeting. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to sum it all up with just something because it's a real life story and it's one I can share publicly. It's in the Sense Making article that is in HBO.
Okay.
It's from a guy named Brian Smith. Brian Smith is at a company called Expedient, which is a cloud computing company. So these guys go up every day head to head with the big guys, right? Brian is he was the head of sales still, but he's also the chief strategy officer now. But I've done his sales kickoffs back in the travel days and remember in the before times. And I have heard Brian say when we were working with a sense making idea, I've literally heard him say in his way, he captures so nicely what you're talking about. He told his entire sales team, it's our job to help our customers make the best decision that they can in as little time as possible. That's what we do. It's like, that's our mission. And he meant it as like, that's our mission. That's our DNA. We are the team that goes out. And this is how you compete against the big guys, right? It's like, we're known as the company that helps you make the best decision that you can, even if it's for the competition. But we just want to be the team that helps you. And by the way, let's not forget, this is sales. So we want to do that in as little time as possible, because if we're going to lose, we want to lose early so we can move on to better opportunities. But I think that's just a really nice way of taking the best of selling and the best of buying and put them together. And it just feels like a good recap of that's what frame making can sound like. And when you get it, and this has to come from someone like Brian, it has to come from a CEO, right? And if you were to tell me, Alice, my best salespeople are doing this already, I'd give that to you 10 days out of 10, right? So yes, your best people. That's why they're your best people. How do you scale this? How do you get your organization up? How do you do this on your website? How do you do this through your channel partner organization? That has to come from a CEO. That kind of vision, that's top of the house.
That vision does have to come from the CEO. And there's so many different roles that the CEO can play now today and should play to make all of this value happen, right? And it's funny that you said that about, what was his name?
His name's Brian with a Y, Brian Smith.
With a Y, because I always say to my clients, our job as sellers is to help our customers make the best decision humanly possible. And that may not include us.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I love Brian's addendum. It's like, if it's not us, could you make it speed it up a little bit?
And speed it up. But see, I love the speed it up part because we do need to do that for them and for us, right?
Exactly.
They don't have the time. We don't have the time. Everybody's plate is full. Let's keep it moving. Like either it's us or it's not. Let's go, you know? Yeah. And these value maps are going to help us. And, you know, again, it's just something that a lot of us have been doing for a long time, but now we're putting it all together in a bit of a different way. And I just love that. I love that.
Cool.
Well, as usual, I could go on for hours talking with you, but for the CEOs out there listening, I'm going to put some resources in the show notes that Brent, did you mention that paper that you wrote?
I did. But so one of the first things I did as a researcher when I got to ecosystems is develop essentially a blueprint. You could think of it as like a maturity model. But if we're going to take our organization on a journey of building out what I would call a commercial operating system, and what I mean by this, from marketing all the way down to expansion, that entire and just take that entire operating system and build it around value, infuse it with value. What would that look like? What would the basic level look like? What would the world-class advanced level look like? I call that you're going to hate this because it's such a wonky researcher name, but I can't help myself. I call it a blueprint for a world-class value-based commercial operating system. It's one of the worst names I've ever given anything, but it's accurate. But I'll send it over to you. You can put it in the show notes because I think it's a great sort of discussion tool for prioritizing, for analyzing, for benchmarking, figuring out what are we going to do to essentially move towards an organization that does what you and I are talking about.
Yeah. So follow Brent on LinkedIn because he's posting all this stuff all the time, and then you'll see he and I having conversations there as well about things that are interesting to both of us. But thanks for sharing today so freely. I really appreciate it. All this talk about value, I think, is just so important. So we'll probably have to continue this conversation. I'll have you on the show again in a couple of months.
But, awesome. Thanks again. All right. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.